Welcome to the 76th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded immediately after number 75 on the first Monday in June, 15 days after Arsenal's final game of the season away to Fulham. Thanks as ever to our sponsors, GoonerShirts.com, the website for all your quality cult Arsenal t-shirt needs. I'm your host, Joe Broadfoot, and still with us are, on our panel, Don Bastiano.
Hey.
Sebastiano, even.
Hey.
Oh, I got two. Whatever it was you said. Kevin Witcher.
Hello again.
And Gunner Talks, Lindsay Sheehan.
Hello.
Right, we're going to kick off with the emails we didn't get a chance to read in the last podcast because we ran out of time. So, first of all, Basti, we've got a couple of questions. This email was sent on the 10th of April by Tyler O'Meara from Canada.
If Cesc were to finally leave the club this summer, who do you think would take over the captaincy? I personally feel it should be Wilshire or Seth Chesney. The Verminator also has shown great qualities.
That actually says, sorry about that, Tyler, that was a really bad Canadian
accent.
He's
very camp, isn't he, Tyler?
Bit camp. And, the Verminator has shown great qualities as well.
So who's going to answer that one? The Verminator, has he shown great qualities, Lindsay?
Yeah, I remember back in the day he once played for us, didn't he? And he was
good. When he wasn't injured.
Yeah.
It was a while back. So well, apart from the last game of the season and a bit.
So we've got the choices of the Verminator, RVP or Jack?
No, Wilshire or Chesney.
Or Chesney?
Weird.
Do we want to put it on Jack so young, really? No, I don't think so either. I think let's let him develop. Let's leave him alone without that one on his back. So I would say, if out of those three, but let's put it on the Verminator.
Right, so it's on the Verminator. So, well, I think we'll move on to our next email at this stage.
Kev,
did you have something?
Kev's
looking like he wasn't going to. Oh, I'm sorry.
Kev, I'm very sorry.
Well, I was looking at you, and you had this decidedly disinterested look upon your face, which was a bit like Danielson during last season. And it made me think, no, leave Danielson on the bench. He doesn't want to come on. I'll select somebody else.
I made
a mistake. Arsene Wenger even makes mistakes, you know. Arsenal Nose Brigade or whatever you call yourself.
There's a glass of wine next to you, Joe.
Yes.
Just drink a little bit and
I'll calm down. I'll leave you to it. I'm
off. It's a Valium.
Oh, that's a bottle top, but that will do.
These artists, honestly. The basic underlying point about this is you're all assuming, or possibly not, but... You know, but just moving on, we're assuming that Robin Van Persie is not going to be given the captaincy.
I said RVP, wasn't it?
And I didn't say anything at all, so how are we all assuming?
Well, Joe, I don't want to persecute the man, but...
go for it.
The long and short of it is, you know, that is probably what's going to happen. And then there is this question of whether or not you should have a striker as a captain. Is that the best way to get the most out of a team? Now, I think personality-wise... You know, he's definitely a character, but positionally for me, you know, the great captains are normally either in midfield or defence. So,
but Arsene Wenger's done it before with Thierry Henry.
Well, see, I mean, you've got to look at the reasons he gives the captaincy sometimes. I don't think Wenger believes the captain is actually important because he's got this idea that all the players are equal on the field. And there's a load of bollocks, basically, because ultimately... You know, not all men are equal, and some are better at telling others to pull their socks up than others.
Going on to RVP then, because I actually really, really, really like his attitude to Arsenal. Please God, that doesn't change over the next 6 weeks. But he's been on the pitch when some of the others have been absent. So where was his leadership then? If we've been saying in the last podcast, we've not had a leader. That was his moment to step up and take it, wasn't it?
I don't think that someone like Robin van Persie, in his position, as Kev was saying, I don't think anyone further up the field than the halfway line, to be honest with you. You know, for me, the Tony Adams captain thing, there was a real mistake England made once. You know, they made Shearer captain.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Wenger is guilty of making Henry captain and... Fabregas captain because he's scared of losing them.
Yes,
and he's used it as a kind of, I'm going to make you the captain of Arsenal, as a kind of bargaining tool, and he's made them captains out of fear, not because they're the best person for the job. And that's completely the wrong motive for it. I think that the obvious clear choice with the personnel we have at the moment would be for Marlon. His positioning, his first game of the season and last game of the season were fantastic. The rest in the middle, obviously, he was injured. Well, a few games at the beginning. But he's got that never say... That's clearance off the line at Fulham. I mentioned it in the last podcast. You know, that's the sort of, you know, Tony Adams punching the air attitude we want at Arsenal, and certainly from the captain. And Fabregas hasn't got that. Robin van Persie, and none of the other players have that. I don't think any of the other players... We need someone who's a leader to be captain. And
what about dealing with the press? Isn't that another
part it's meaningless. Who cares about that?
Yeah, sod the press. I mean, it's on the pitch. Yeah, look, we win something.
You say that, but the captain has to deal with the press.
Yeah, he does, but it doesn't matter if he's good at that or not. I mean, sod the press.
No, but you say that, Kev. If he was bad at it, we would soon be paying the price. In as much as
we're going to get dot points because he doesn't give a good post match interview.
No, we wouldn't get dot
points. Well, Tony Adams wasn't good with the press. He got drunk and drove into brick walls. I think the manager can deal with the press. I don't think that captains need to deal with shit on the field. You know, it's Sarge in the trenches. That's what you want. And we don't have a Sarge in the trenches who shouts at everyone, motivates people, guides people afterwards, after a defeat. You know, something like that, Koscielny getting sacked over the back of the head at Birmingham. Adams or Keane would have gone up, put their arm round him and said, it's all right, mate, come on. Picked him up off the ground and said, let's get on with it, we've got a game next week. Mm. You know, and we don't have anyone like that. And that's what's missing. And Gallas certainly wasn't that player either, was he? If, on the contrary, he'd sit down without making a mistake and sob in the centre of the pitch. So that's what we need. And I hate to say it, but I'd love to see us get someone like John Terry or someone along those lines. I know a lot of people hate John Terry or whatever, but I don't. That's the sort of player we need as a captain. And if we can't get him, then someone along those lines. But I don't know who's available.
So basically you're saying that, say we had somebody like John Terry and he started having it off with one of the players' wives... Like, you're saying that's okay.
He can have it off with anyone he wants. That doesn't matter.
Kev,
who cares?
I'm only saying.
Dragging something in which is irrelevant. I mean, you know, that
can
happen.
It's relevant because it's to do with the press.
It just happens to be.
Why are you so hung up on the press?
Because the press is part of it.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
The more we're attacked by the press, the better.
Yes, I do agree with that.
You know, bring them on, as far as I'm concerned. What I want my captain to do is on the field. You know, in terms of team morale, I accept the idea that he's screwing one of the other players' misses isn't good. But, you know, we're going down a tangent there, which hopefully we won't need to explore. So
you're missing the point that John Terry's a complete cunt and we never want him in an Arsenal shirt, which is the main...
I've got nothing against him. He's the sort of player... I'm talking purely football. I don't care about the players' private lives. If they're not actually killing anyone, they can do whatever they like.
Yeah, the bottom line is we want to win games. Simple as that.
That's it. That's all I care about.
But personally, I believe that the press put pressure on the team, and if the captain comes out and says the wrong things after matches, it has an effect because they read the press. Even though they say they don't, they do. You know full well they do.
I've got the Champions video, and there's a very apt line where I don't know who's doing the commentating, but he said, "And the press would gift wrap another stick in which to beat the Arsenal." And what did we win that year? The big one. So I don't care what the press say. I like the siege mentality. Obviously, you've got to have someone who's not too monosyllabic. But I think Vermaelen is an intelligent boy, and I think he would handle that job brilliantly. He's positioned, like you said, firstly, to have the leader in our defence with the defence the way it is or has been would be real affirming for us to have somebody at the back screaming and shouting.
Fabregas has never really done.
No, he's never been a screamer.
Basically, I think Wenger's got a decision to make over the summer. My suspicion is he will bottle it and go for Van Persie. But you know, if he knew the best thing for the team, he would go for Vermaelen.
Well, I've always said another thing that, you know, players like Henri, Van Persie, players who play up front, they want to concentrate on one thing only, and that's getting the ball in the back of the net or making a goal. They don't want to be worrying about other things at all, the politics of what goes on the pitch or all the other things that a captain might have to get involved in. So it's just completely stupid to make a striker or an attacking midfielder even, I think, captain. Pointless.
Doesn't generally work. But moving on to the other email that we've got for this particular podcast, we've got one from Patrick Brunberg. It was sent in early March, and it proved to be strangely prescient. If you wouldn't mind doing the honours, Lindsay?
I am an Arsenal season ticket holder, and every time we have a Premier League game that is not played at 3 p.m, I get a bad feeling about it. Looking at this season in the Premier League, 4 out of 5 defeats have been in games played either earlier or later than 3 p.m. I know that most of our defeats have been to decent sides, such as Spuds, Manure or Chelsea, but do you think that the time of kick-off has an impact? Are players' training / match day routines broken and therefore have an impact mentally? Can the fact that we play either before or after other results are known have an effect on the Arsenal players? Do you think there is any link? I definitely think there is. Also, looking at the April fixture list, all of our Premier League games will be played either before or after 3 p.m. I guess I will have that bad feeling for our April then. Would be great if you could raise the issue in one of your podcasts, which we do.
Right, so we're going to look at the issue of 3 p.m. kickoffs. Are Arsenal necessarily better kicking off at 3 p.m. rather than, say, 12 noon or 5 p.m. or even 7:45?
We tend to be dreadful when we don't play at 3 o'clock. It's my experience. I don't know why. Towards the end of the season, I noticed there was a little run of kind of middays and 1 o'clocks and weird times. And my heart kind of sinks a bit. I don't know what it is. We're just not good at getting up in the morning.
I mean, the manager puts a great store on the way the players are prepared, and but there being no variety in their preparation from game to game. So much so that when they play away in the Champions League, they will do a training session the day before at their own training ground, fly out to the city in question, and not visit the stadium where they're going to play. And most other teams do their training session when they arrive in that city. They go to the stadium, get the feel of the place, and night before, have their session. But Arsene wants it to be the same every time. So the only difference is the name of the airport where the players happen to land. But everything else is just designed not to be any distraction to them, so they have complete focus on their game. And you've got to wonder if the obsession with this actually ends up having a negative effect, that they're not very adaptable. So I think that there is something to be said for changing in the routine actually is not suited to some of these players. And then you've got to ask the question, well, if you're going to be a successful team, you can be kicking off all bloody times, so you get used to it and you adapt with it. So get rid of this obsession with never changing anything and start treating each game individually for what it is, including preparing for the opposition, and maybe we could see better results.
Is that your experience as well, Lindsay? That it's a 3 p.m. or probably not going to do well.
Well, I know it used to be when they had Satanta, and you just thought, oh shit, we're going to lose today because it was a 5:15 on Satanta special, and you knew we were going up the wall. So there is something in it. I don't know why that would not make any difference. We've had such a good away form this season, so if that doesn't affect their away form, why does it affect with the timing? I don't know, but there's definitely something in it because we are. I used to think that sometimes if you knew, because where we are mentally with that team, I used to think if they knew what had happened elsewhere, that was what put them into the meltdown. But that doesn't work for the 1 o'clock kickoffs, does it?
Well, I wish I could say something different, but
all we can say is it's not going to change. We will be, unless we drop out of contention completely. I mean, the really worrying thing is we don't get through the Champions League qualifier, and we're playing every bloody game on Sunday next season. Because I don't think any of us really enjoy Sunday matches that much. I think we'd all rather play on Saturday. But if we're in the Europa League, we will be playing on Sunday a hell of a lot.
Well, moving from that sad thought to something happy, what about the highlight? And then also the low light of last season. Can we go through, have a little think about it. I'll tell you my highlight of last season was probably beating Chelsea at home. That was definitely the highlight for me because I'd just come back from Japan and there I was getting a ticket in the North Bank right near the front and it was impossible. Don't we actually beat Chelsea? It seemed so impossible. And people were slagging off Theo all around me and there he was scoring a goal. Thank you. I said it all along. It's not that bad.
It was a great moment. It's got to be Barca at home for me. That might be because I wasn't at the Chelsea game actually. So had I been there, maybe I'd have felt different. I was in Hamburg at the time, watching it on a grainy kind of what's it thing, but Yeah, that was definitely one of them, but Barca edges it, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. For me, the away trip to Blackpool, for many reasons. Nice sunny day, and you walk in the ground, someone says to you, Lehman's playing. And my initial thought was, Wenger's had the bollocks to drop Almunia.
Mm.
Brilliant. And as it turned out subsequently, now I've never quite got to the bottom of this. In theory, he injured himself during the warm-up. Mm. Someone else said to me that he just really crap in the warm-up.
Mm.
And he obviously his confidence had gone. And he decided himself he almost couldn't play. And declared himself injured. Mm. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But just to see the contrast between what we'd been putting up with Almunia and then seeing Lehman back in the goal, bawling out some of his defenders. It was just emotional for me, and I just loved it. And even Jens, true to form, gave away a bloody penalty but got away with it. he should have got the red card, but fortunately they scored and he got away with it. But I just loved that afternoon.
How about for you, Lindsay?
My top three: third place Man United at home, second place Chelsea at home, first place Barcelona.
And now the opposite. What about the low lights? The low
plenty
point?
Of choices.
Oh dear,
plenty of choices.
Some of them,
it's much harder to pick out something.
Well, I mean,
just the one.
I mean, obviously, you know, losing the Carling Cup final in the way we did is going to be a major one. But ultimately, for what it says about the team, the Newcastle away second half was a dagger through the heart, and ultimately, that was probably where the season actually was lost. Not Birmingham, which was a couple of weeks later. It was there when the confidence of the team just completely collapsed. Now, there was different factors. Certainly, Diaby's indiscipline, which is unforgivable.
Mm.
Obviously, the referee had a stinker. But even so, we did play very poorly. And Rzyski was... I was amazed to see Rzyski ever line up in an Arsenal shirt again after that game, and yet there he was at Wembley in the Carling Cup final. So that probably is it. And I think it will be remembered as a unique point in Arsenal's history, and well, hopefully it won't happen again, but I mean, just the stuff of nightmares.
I'd just like to add my low point of the season, because you've sort of reminded me in a roundabout way. For some reason, I suddenly thought about Emmanuel Eboué and against Liverpool and his indiscipline.
Mm.
And he's been one of those players that I used to say, if he was played in the right position, and I don't really feel he's a right back, he's a right winger, and he's turned out to be neither a right
he's
back
a
nor a right.
He's
right
a cool jester.
And that realisation was very painful to me, that even somebody that has a lot of pace like Eboué, has some skill, yet he's not going. It doesn't seem like he's going to make it at Arsenal. And that realization that he's actually going to cost us the title—that's how it felt at the time of him, you know, showing this tremendous amount of indiscipline, getting away with it, and then doing the same thing again. You know, it was just crazy to do it twice, to give away two silly fouls. So for me, that was probably the lowest point.
I think that Liverpool game for me personally, emotionally, was the low point. Although I agree with Kev that giving, I almost found it comical that we'd given the 4-0 away. I nearly went into the bookies at half time because I said, someone came up to me and said, I wasn't watching the Newcastle game, and someone said it's 4-0 to Arsenal at half time. I was like, my first instinct was go and put a tenner on 4-all. I don't know why, I just thought, you know, we're going to throw this away. And that was at half time. And I couldn't believe it. As I walked down the road, I kept checking the scores, and it just kept on going, getting worse and worse. And finally, I got to the greengrocer's at the bottom. He said, you're not going to believe this. I said, oh, I know. It was just, you know, and it was just everything just hurtled into this vortex of, you know.
Well, you almost lost that game.
They could have won it at the end.
Oh. So,
I wish you lot could see the expressions of the body language in this room right now.
Yeah.
There were so many low points, let's face it. And towards the end, it was just one after the other, really, wasn't it?
Mm.
My low point was Stoke away. And I know, obviously, it was all pretty much done and dusted by then, but I thought the way that team, who... I know what you're saying about Eboué, but you could really go through the whole team and list an individual error by almost all of them that has cost us either a final or points.
But that team, after what happened to Aaron Ramsey there last time, couldn't be asked to show up and to make sure that whatever happened, that was one we weren't going to lose.
Yeah.
The Stoke fans were abusing the boy. They were giving us stick all over the place. And if that had been my mate, let alone my colleague, let alone someone I've watched come back from a career-threatening injury, I would have gone home 3 points in my bag, and I wouldn't have let that boy been on the losing team, let alone having Wenger have to substitute him because of the abuse or whatever reason he wants to cite for that. And I thought that they were cowards in that game, and I was embarrassed for them.
Was it the Stoke game where they were singing boring?
Yeah.
Boring. Yeah. What was it?
Boring, boring, boring.
Mm. Boring, boring, boring. Yeah, it wasn't even boring, boring Arsenal.
And that involved an extra word that they couldn't conjure up.
The most painful bit of that was I had to agree with them. I'm getting bored of us passing the ball around the fucking area and not getting it into the air and then going back a bit and then going left and then going right and then going left and then going right. You know, and I hated it, but I actually sort of, you know, had that kind of, you know, we've all had those moments up the North Bank where we're so shit, you know, in the past, the years gone by, where you've got, we're so bad, you actually start kind of thinking, all right, let the other team, put us out of our misery, you know, that sort of kamikaze moment. And I actually had that moment with the Stoke game when they were singing boring. I thought, yeah, I've had enough of this, we are. Something's got to change. So that was a very low point as well, yeah.
Yeah, it was more than a little bit disappointing. But one player who came out as a shining light in this season was Jack Wilshere, of course, and he's not going to the European Under-21 Championships with England and Stuart Pearce. He wanted to go, so why do you think he's been persuaded to pull out? Because it seemed a dead cert that he was going to be going. What do you think about that, Kev?
Well, I suppose possibly the manager told him that he wouldn't be starting next season if he went. And I guess the fear that new guys would arrive and he wouldn't be starting the matches was enough to basically put the fear of God into him and basically he was blackmailed, I think. In fairness, the manager probably does have an argument that if he did go, he wouldn't necessarily be ready for the start of next season, because the one thing I think he does need is a rest, in all fairness.
Yeah.
And I think it's a wise decision. I think it's heart ruling head with Wilshere wanting to go, but that's the reason he is his age. He's immature. If he wants to play, in the unlikely event England managed to qualify for Euro 2012, if he wants to play there, chances are playing in through this summer is going to make that a longer shot than it should be. So I'm pleased that's been decided, and I suspect he was leaned on by the manager who put him straight, and I'm sure the manager would carry through what he says.
Well, what's strange is today, in today's Evening Standard, they have Wilshere coming out and say, calling for a mid-term break, sort of, which Wenger's been calling for ages. But there's, you know, that's been reignited, the should we have a winter break thing. And there's this picture of Wilshere kind of in an England shirt looking really tired and saying he's come out backing the winter break. So it may be that rather than tell him with a gun to his head, I think Wenger's probably had a kind of fatherly chat and sat down and said, listen, you know, let's look at this objectively. If you're going to play for the England team, the Arsenal team, the England 21s, under-21s team, you know, you're going to, to put it in an F word, you're going to be fucked, you know.
Well, I mean, I think the last month of the season, his levels were lower. I don't think he was quite as energetic as he had been. So, you know, I think most people did feel he was already running out of steam, which is obviously no surprise, because he had played out of a lot of games.
But this is why he's loved, isn't it? This is why he will be loved by England fans, and this is why he's loved by us, because he is so enthusiastic. He just wants to play football. He loves the game. He loves the fans. He loves the whole thing about it. And he, you know, this is when the manager has to do his job and come in and say, look, you know, my experience is, and this is the way it is. Otherwise, you will suffer from it. And I think we've done the right thing there. And I think it was a stupid debate in the first place, to be totally honest with you. Had he not been a senior, fair enough, but he's a senior international now.
Yeah, why should you play for both? That's ridiculous. One or the other.
They wouldn't do that with Rooney, would they? And Carroll was the same situation, isn't it? No one was getting out their pram about Carroll not wanting to go, or Liverpool not wanting him to go. So
it's interesting to look at other players that have played a lot when they're young and what's happened to them. you just look at Michael Owen.
Yeah.
And you also look at Fabregas, mm-hmm. who is injured quite a bit these days. And then you compare them with someone like Ryan Giggs, who was playing at that age, and yet he didn't really do the international football thing.
Because he missed a lot of friendlies, didn't he?
A, he didn't go to friendlies, and B, Wales never qualified for any of these fights. So he always had a break. And he's, you know, basically he had a long career in which injury was not a big thing. So there is a logic to, you know, what Wenger's saying, and we all believe it. But, you know, it's interesting now, would we have had him protect Fabregas, for example, in 2004-05 and 2005-06, knowing what we do now, that we would have got more games from him, you know, the last three seasons? Because he's missed about a third of the matches. So, yeah, I mean, when you are young, you if you play too much, you end up paying the penalty.
And this is his first season, isn't it? I mean, you know, let's give the kid a break. I mean, it's first real breakthrough season. No one expected him to play this much football, and he has. And the last thing he needs is two tournaments, one at the beginning and one at the end.
But, you know, the one thing I find a bit baffling about all this is that it seemed to me that Jack Wilshere was dictating the terms to Arsene Wenger at the end of last season, in as much as he was saying, you know, if you're going to loan me out somewhere else, that's what I heard, if you loan me out somewhere else again, you might as well sell me. I want to play first team football. So he had the upper hand. So Arsene Wenger must have been, you know, very diplomatic in the way he dealt with Jack. He wouldn't have been saying to him, oh, you're going to definitely be out of the side. I mean, Basti kind of touched on that, the way Basti interpreted what actually happened sounded similar to my interpretation, in as much as he had a fatherly talk and convinced Jack that you know, you're better off not involving yourself in under 21 international duty.
Well, I think there's, you know, we've had a lot of criticism of our manager recently, certainly in the last couple of podcasts, and certainly amongst all of us. But there are things that he does extremely well, and one of the reasons Fabregas was so tight-lipped about the transfer stuff last year was his respect for Arsene Wenger. So, you know, why are we surprised that he's handled this situation well?
Yeah, he did a good job on it.
Which does bring us on to, it's summer, isn't it, Kev? Is there going to be a question about transfer speculation?
There may well be, Joe.
Well, we'll move on to that swiftly then. Nicholas Benner and Danielson. You're anticipating the questions before I am. Nicholas Benner and Danielson, are we going to be sad to see the back of them, given some of the comments that have been coming out of late? Particularly, I read the other day that Benner 100% is going to be leaving Arsenal. Even though I'm not the hugest fan of Nicholas Benner, I was kind of disappointed with that. Danielson, I'm not going to comment on that one at all.
If we can get decent money for either player, I think we'd all be dancing for joy. Benner has his fans, and there are some who would say he hasn't had a good deal the last 12 months, but my overall impression of the player is that he will not put in a shift most of the time. He does very occasionally, but not enough for me to think he's worth persevering with, because the one thing that great strikers will do is work with a team, and although Bentner's done it periodically, as a rule he is perceived as a lazy sod. And we know we don't need lazy sods.
But he is a typical centre forward, in as much as he can actually head the ball.
He's come on and scored some crucial goals.
And he will get better. I mean, he's so far off his peak years.
But I'll be honest, as a striker, I'll be honest with you, neither he nor Chamakh are the sort of strikers that I really want to see in an Arsenal shirt. RVP, yes, although he needs support, but he doesn't need Benter and Chamakh, in my opinion. Danielson, see ya, mate. You know, I love that. I don't often read The Sun, but there happened to be one in my local and I picked it up. That's my excuse. and I read the Danielson thing, obviously, and it just made me laugh that he was going on about how, yeah, you know, that it said Danielson joined Arsenal 6 years ago and, you know, the reason I'm leaving is we haven't won anything in 5 years. Hello? Well, I wonder what the fucking common denominator of that was. You in the middle of the park. You know, I can't blame him totally, but the bottom line is, goodbye and good riddance to Danielson, I'm afraid. And yeah, Alfieda's in to the pair of them. I won't lose sleep.
Mm. It's difficult to argue with that. Would you like to
offering to drive either of them to the airport. I like Danielson. I always remember that little YouTube clip of him sitting around with Gilberto having a little Brazilian party in the flat. You know, then, but not good enough for the Arsenal.
I wondered what he was going to say.
It was that delay. Cute.
And it's not about being cute. We don't want cute people.
No, but I think he's a nice lad and he gets a lot of stick, and I'll be pleased to see the back of him in all honesty. But I think he gets it a lot.
Drive him to the airport. I'll get on the plane with him and make sure he gets off at Rio. Preferably have a couple of weeks on the beach in Rio as well. That'd be good. But not with Danielson.
But there's two players you definitely wouldn't drive to the airport, and that's Cesc Fabregas and Nasri. And there's been a lot of talk about those two leaving. What do you make of it, or Kev?
I think one of them's definitely going. The hope, I suppose, is that Nasri's just angling to play in Cesc's position, which the funny thing about that was he had several opportunities to do so last year and the manager wouldn't put him there. So... you've got to wonder what the policy is going to be there.
The Carling Cup final being an example,
of course. God's sake, madness. People talk about Bentner shouldn't be played out of position, but he was a better option starting the game anyway than bloody Rosicky. But he was on the bench. I think people will be surprised if Fabregas is still at the club. There's enough money out there to match what Arsenal want. And
how much do they want? Is it 50 million like this?
They would take 45 million. Oh. That's, I think, the price.
But wouldn't the right way to be going about this to keep Fabregas, keep Nasri, get rid of the Diabis, the Rosickis?
Well, the problem is we are a selling club. History has indicated that is the case. And the manager's obsession with spending as little as possible in the transfer market means that... we will continue to be a selling club, because the one thing about players like Fabregas is that they want to win things and they don't think they will unless they're surrounded by better players, and there's a lot of sympathy for his reasons to want to go to another team. What could happen is if Man City did offer stupid money and ridiculous wages, he could be tempted just for economic reasons to try there for a season or two, and that would be nasty. Because then he'd be coming back to play us from another Premier League team, and it just wouldn't be—it wouldn't be pretty.
I don't think he'd do that.
I don't think he would.
I don't think he'd do that. If he was going to go, he'd go to Spain anyway, because he'd want the lifestyle, the family. He'd want to go back to his probably Barca as well. The only thing with Barca is, of course, would Xavi or Iniesta, would he get a game? So that's the thing,
But that's his concern, and I don't think he cares, does he? He just wants to go.
Well. I think if I was Arsene Wenger, I'd sit him down and say, this is what my dream, if I was dreaming dream talks, I'd sit down with Cesc Fabregas and say, listen, we're going to get some serious players in here. We're going to put John Terry next to Vermaelen. We're going to put, it's a ludicrous dream thing. We're going to get, I don't know who in the centre of midfield, but two or three proven players. There was talk from the greengrocer, I get a lot of stuff from the greengrocer. Mm-hmm. He said that Sanya and Clichy, Madrid wanted them, and we were going to get what's his name, the Madrid guy who can't get a game at Madrid, Benzema, right up front. He plays up front, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Get Benzema on a sort of, give them some money and Clichy and Sanya for Benzema. Is that crazy? Or is this greengrocer just lost the plot?
I think your greengrocer's slightly lost the plot. I can imagine one going, but not the two.
Well, now Clichy has a year on his deal, and every chance Clichy will be sold. Sanya would be a surprise. I'd be very surprised to see him go.
What would you pay Clichy, and how much for Benzema?
We want to value Clichy with a year left on his contract. Absolute maximum.
£3.50.
£8 million.
No, we're paying them because we're getting Benzema.
He's a make weight in the deal.
Right, I see, yeah.
And then you
value
Benzema at, let's say, in the inflated market of today, 30 million.
Ooh.
So you're paying 22 million for him. I mean, he's not. I don't think he's worth that.
None of them are they? We have to accept that none of them are worth.
Yeah, but there are more proven players, and I'd rather have someone who had Premier League experience.
Somebody like Scott Parker, for instance. I mean, he's been talked about a lot.
I would take Parker as a squad player who can do a job. I mean, the one thing that I think needs to happen is Alex Song needs to pull his bootlaces up, because frankly, he's got very complacent. There's no challenge for his position, and I think a lot of these players would play better if they weren't guaranteed a spot in the team. So I think we need genuine competition for places, and I think buying someone like Parker would provide that. And also, he seems to me to be made of the right stuff. Certainly, if you ask West Ham,
he's got a terrible injury record. That's the only
problem. The last thing we need is someone like that. But isn't there a thing about, don't we need to have more, a larger quota of British players at some point in the future?
Well, they're home developed, which can mean you bring them in at 16 from
Clichy counts, right, as home developed.
For example, Fabregas, you know.
So, and Fabregas too, yeah.
I mean, what the other thing which Wenger's alluded to is we need bigger players.
There was talk of, not on the bigger player front, but on the sort of British player front, of sort of Downings and Cahills and people like that, so
Cahill,
a bit more kind of bulldog atmosphere.
I'll take the other Cahill. I'll take the Everton Cahill as well, the Australian Cahill, because he's another guy.
Jagielka's all reared its head again today, hasn't it?
No, that's that. They were looking at him a year ago.
And what about Ashley Young? Ashley Young is actually a Gooner. Do you realise that?
I think he's just another.
Is he
another Theo?
Well, so
he could be another Theo.
So is Harry Redknapp.
He is actually. You're right about that as well. But Ashley Young is an Arsenal supporter, and he ended up going to Villa, and I could never understand that at the time when that deal went through. He looked electric to me.
I think we would
he
all
wasn't
like
quite
to see,
as good would, as Theo, but would, wasn't far behind at that stage.
Wouldn't we like to see, I don't know what other Gooners are thinking, but there is a point where we're thinking Deadwood out, like get kind of a bit of a major shift going. Let's do something radical, because all these little tweaks don't seem to be working. And get, you know, I mean, I would like to see Diaby and Chamakh and a couple of other players, maybe Clichy, I really like Gael Clichy, but he's just not been consistent. He's been slipping up.
He's not stagnant, hasn't he? He's been at the club a long time, and he's another one that you're saying like a song.
And Diaby, you mentioned at Newcastle, and the whole, you know, that we need players with brains as well, a little bit. And I'm afraid we've got a few players that they don't have the mental strength that Wenger's so proud of mentioning, or, you know, the mental strength, you must have some mental strength, but we don't really have it.
Don't seem to be
Aboué as well. Yeah. I mean, Aboué, God bless him, yes, he's great fun, he's a jester, he's a clown, I love him as a cult hero, but I don't really want him in a winning Arsenal team, because he's not going to be in one, is he?
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way after the Liverpool game. Up until then, I was always ready to give him one more chance, and he sort of run out of one chance saloon, or whatever you call it.
So would you put in say, if you could have one defender, one midfielder, a defensive midfielder, one attacking midfielder, and one attacker, say four new players for Arsenal?
I'd have Pepe from Real Madrid, who can play midfield or defence. In the central midfield, we need a stopper for me. You know, I mean, some boring bastard who's just going to stop the ball coming through. It doesn't have to be anyone glamorous.
Johnny Jensen?
Well, I mean, someone of that ilk,
Well, maybe a bit better.
I mean, I haven't been watching enough football matches lately to point people out, but
emails on an email.
Email us with your suggestions. Up front, I'll have Lionel Messi up front, and that'll do me.
Well, that, all right. Yeah, dream on.
So you're not
keep Fabregas, wouldn't it?
So you're not buying into this idea that we should buy British or English watching England?
It is
not
preferable,
sure.
But I mean, the bottom line is, you know, we've got a certain amount of money, and English players cost twice the money. I mean, you know, Vidic was an example of a bargain you can get if you've got a decent scouting system. I mean, the real frustration for me of our scouting system is we get a 16-year-old called Carlos Vela, and Man United spend 20 times the money 5 years later on a guy called Hernandez, and so they've got him for 10 million, we've got ours for 500,000, but who's got the better deal ultimately? You know, because Hernandez is going to turn end product into financial gain for Manchester United and more than pay the 9.5 million difference, So what we need to start doing is buying players in their early 20s who've already got a little bit of a track record and do cost more, but are more or less semi-proven, as opposed to punts. Because what we're getting with 16, 17, 18-year-olds is punts. And the problem with that is like a bloody lottery. You know, you might get a Jack Wilshere, yeah, okay, but you get a lot of Danielsons for that as well. And frankly, we've got to be getting more certain bets than we are doing. Otherwise, you end up with some of the shambolic performances we have seen, where the team has looked disjointed and unintelligent and spiritless.
Oh, there's one player we forgot to mention, which is Giroud.
Lately,
Giroud, Skrinarci, and Koscielny.
Shame that.
I mean, defensively, you know, if we had a British defence, let's say, I don't want to get all British.
I'm going to actually defend Giroud.
But if we had, you know, the Keown, Adams, Winterburn, Dixon, or the modern equivalent thereof, exactly the same midfield and exactly the same attack, but we'd have had a really, like, you know, hardcore defence. Basically, we've just conceded too many goals this season, haven't we? I mean, we've been able to score.
That's true,
goals.
But Giroud's had his good games in the season just gone. They just weren't at the end of the season. That's my take on Giroud.
And what was it Wenger was saying, that he didn't want to rush him back into full, and you know, he was what we were pinning our hopes on in every defence.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, so the other thing is Johan Cruyff said recently that all the great teams have a basis of 6 or 7 players from the country they play in. Mm. And I think that is actually probably true. Mm. So we did have that at Arsenal.
That's true. Man U and Chelsea have got that. Mm.
But if you bring in a player that's acclimatised to this country, like Christopher Samba, for instance, that's one player we didn't mention, who's been very heavily connected with Arsenal. Apparently, he was very close to moving in January for some reason or another. Didn't happen. Is it going to happen in the summer? And do we want it? Do we want
it? Well,
we
need a lump. Yeah, I mean, I think him next to Vermaelen would actually be a good combination. Mm. And there's nothing cultured about Vidic. You know, Vidic is a lump as well.
Yeah, but Vidic is the sort of player you want as a centre-back, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think Samba, from you know what I've seen of him, he might not be the footballer that Wenger would like in terms of his abilities on the ball. But in terms of commitment and attitude, I think he's probably the sort of player we do actually need.
Well, that's exactly it, commitment and attitude.
Well, he ticks the boxes, doesn't he? He's experienced in the Premier League. I'd like us to buy some British players. But, I mean, what I want them to do is have an experience of where we're playing now. So there's no settling in period. You know, whatever the nationality, if they've played, especially in defence where we are roping, I'd like them to have played in the EPL. I think he's got the good attitude. And you look at some of these Manchester United teams, they're not all perfectly talented. They're all not twinkle toes on the balls. They are blokes that do their job well, and they do, and they know what their job is. Mm. They know exactly what the geezer next to them is supposed to do and the bloke in front, and that's what they do. And they might not have the skills of a fairy like we've all got. They might not be able to conjure a bit of magic, but what they do and what their responsibility is their bread and butter, and we need a couple of players at the back like that.
Yeah, Dixon and Winterburn, basically. You know, they weren't clever little fairies either, but they did their jobs.
Yeah, there was balance in the team back then. Maybe we're lacking it now. But to wrap up in traditional style, the email address for any communications about this particular podcast is GoonaPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks once again to our sponsors, GoonaShirts.com. Before we go, just a quick opportunity for one of our panel to give a plug to the website she is here representing, Lindsay.
Oh, hello, Gooners. Please check out GunnerTalk.com. You'll find real HD match day interviews with you lot, having a moan, having a sing, telling us what you thought of the games. We've got the interviews with the Black Scarf Movement, loads of blogs, loads of funny photoshops. It's just a general good laugh at GunnerTalk.
And we will be back in August, hopefully, to discuss some new signings and the pre-season tour of Malaysia and China, which, of course, is definitely going to happen. The new signings, I'm not so sure about. Well, just a quick reminder that the current issue of the Gooner, number 215, or 215 in some other language, can still be bought online from the Gooner Shop section of our website, onlinegooner.com. Thanks to the panel. I've been your host, Joe Brawford. Thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company, way!